What happened last night? This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning. Sometimes the news fairy just comes through, man.
Good morning.
This whole week I've been putting together stuff for the show, as I do every week leading up to every Sports Sunday. And as of, I don't know, Friday afternoon, I was starting to piece together, okay, we spend a little bit of time here, a little bit of time here. Maybe we talk a little bit of what's going on with the Chiefs and OTAs, see what the Royals have done by Sunday morning. And then came 6:30. And the Chiefs released Jeremy Maclin. I had such a conflict of emotions at that moment. Because my first reaction was, what? No. Why? How? Who did this? My second reaction was, no. Still, no. This is still bad. I still hate this. And then my third reaction was, oh, Sports Sunday just filled up. Oh, that show's ready to go now. Oh, this is fantastic. And there's a ton of great news from yesterday. You know, the Royals have won two in a row, that two nice wins in a row. Edinson Volquez pitches a no-hitter, first of the MLB season, on what would have been Yordano Ventura's birthday. Yesterday was a good local baseball day. But today is about Jeremy Maclin, man. A team with an offense that came out completely flat in the playoffs. A team with an offense that was the weak link throughout the entire season. Just made its biggest move for 2017 regarding the offense. They cut their number one receiver. And so, I think we have to do this Jeremy Maclin analysis in two ways. I think we have to figure out, or attempt to figure out, the why, and then the what now. And this is going to, this, for all I know, this could take the whole show to figure out. And it could take two sentences by the end of it, whenever we go, actually, here's why it is. But I think this is an incredible, complex, mind-blowing story. And I'm this peppy, and I'm already, like, I don't know, four Benadryl into this morning. I don't know what kind of person gets a cold or gets sneezy in early June. Apparently, it's this kind of person. I'm a fistful of Benadryl and two bags of cough drops into today, and I am still just wired. So what does this mean? What does cutting Jeremy Maclin mean for the 2017 Chiefs? Let's start there. That's the most immediate thing. And frankly, that's what we're all looking forward to. I mean, the future of Pat Mahomes is going to be fascinating for years to come. But all of the OTAs going on now, all of this chatter going on now, it's all about the 2017 Chiefs. We're not so forward-thinking that we're ignoring the season that's coming up. And it's not a death sentence for the Chiefs' offense this upcoming season, cutting Jeremy Maclin, but it also doesn't help this year's Chiefs team. It doesn't help them at all, and that's why this move is so confusing. And I'm not even coming at this as the biggest cynic in the Chiefs' kingdom, or whatever. I'm a huge optimist for Tyreek Hill. I have some significant hope for Chris Conley. Travis Kelce is the first or second best option in the passing game. But let's stop right now. Let's be incredibly optimistic. Let's find the most optimistic guy in Kansas City. Let's be that person here for a second. Let's say that Tyreek Hill is developing into DeSean Jackson, and that Travis Kelce is going to be Tony Gonzalez, and that Chris Conley is going to be Jeremy Maclin. Whoops. Even with all of that optimism, that Tyreek Hill's the number one receiver, Chris Conley's the number two receiver, Travis Kelce is Rob Gronkowski. With all of that optimism, with all of the optimism that I can possibly pull together, This offense is still better with Jeremy Maclin as the number three wide receiver over Jehu Chesson or Albert Wilson or DeAnthony Thomas or DeMarcus Robinson or whoever that next guy is. That's why this move is so confusing. And if you're going to say, well, listen, the only way those guys are going to develop is by getting snaps, catching passes. If your best benefit from cutting Jeremy Maclin is the fact that now you can get more meaningful snaps to those other guys, then you are completely recalibrating your expectations for this season. You have the Chiefs now punting this season to get the young guys ready. And if you're trying to do that, then just cut Alex Smith. You can save like $13 million on the cap this year. See what Tyler Bray is. Just tell everyone you're not bothering with this season. And then see when Pat Mahomes is ready to take over, then give him the reins. $13 million you could save by cutting Alex Smith. You could find out what Tyler Bray is by giving him those snaps, if that's your logic. Now, I don't actually think that's what the Chiefs are doing. I don't think it's what I would be doing. But there's a school of thought, especially in the AFC, that teams should be preparing for the next iteration of the NFL. Especially, again, for the AFC. For the AFC, after Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger retire. And again, I don't think that's what the Chiefs are doing, but I do think that's at least interesting. But I don't think the Chiefs are doing any of those things we've already unpacked. I think we've gone to plausible options and then crossed everything off. Which leaves me with the obvious question that I had whenever I found out this news, the question that persists: what are they doing? What was the point? What is the plan? Ultimately, the Chiefs needed to create a couple million dollars in cap space to sign all the rookies. And they cut Jeremy Maclin. They could have cut Ja Reed and made enough space for the rookies. It's not that needy. And the Chiefs do create now $10 million of cap space this year, but per over the cap. Now the Chiefs are going to be paying Jeremy Maclin $2.5 million per year for the next 3 years. $2.5 million of dead cap money. 2017, 2018, 2019. And that $10 million this year, the $10 million cut for this year, is going to pick up rookie contracts and little to nothing else. It's going to help you sign depth guys as guys get hurt. And the NFL does allow for cap carryover, which is basically like rollover minutes, but for salary cap space. So there can be a little bit of help for the Chiefs. For the Chiefs next year. It's better for next year to cut him this year. But that's just not a good enough reason to cut maybe your quarterback's most trusted receiver. Also, your most veteran receiver. I think now the most veteran receiver in the Chiefs locker room is Albert Wilson, DeSean Jackson. I think they're both 24, I read somewhere. I mean, those are your veterans. Your veterans are guys who barely made the roster last year. And also, for any of the justifications that you can do for this move, now you've got to look at this whole Jeremy Maclin project as a net loss. Because they lost a third and a sixth round pick for tampering, and now they have to pay him $2.5 million to not play for the next 3 years. And even if you think that he was the third best option on this team, the Chiefs shouldn't be cutting their third best option, because even if he's overpaid, the offense was largely terrible last year. And the Red Bull effect here is substantial. Because even if you're discounting the importance of Maclin just as much as you can, you still have to eventually take inventory and go, oh, well, we're not really doing the math here very well, are we? Because you're not replacing Jeremy Maclin with Tyreek Hill. You've got to get this out of your head. You're not replacing Jeremy Maclin with more Travis Kelce. I mean, ideally, there will be more targets now to go to Hill and to Kelce and, I guess, Chris Conley. And again, I'm optimistic about all three of those guys. But you're taking away Jeremy Maclin and you're replacing him with DeMarcus Robinson or DeAnthony Thomas or Albert Wilson or Jehu Chesson. Because those are the guys who are going to get on the field in Macklin's absence. And this offense is nowhere near good enough to justify that. It's a completely off-kilter algebra equation when you do it that way. And it just doesn't make sense on so many levels. So truly, I don't know why the Chiefs at any point decided this was the move to make. Unless you bring in this results in a trade for Richard Sherman, which was one of the early hopeful Chiefs fans Twitter storms. Yeah, well, maybe they're clearing off this cap room for something. And that's just not in John Dorsey's character that I can tell. But especially this year. What are the Chiefs going to give Seattle for Richard Sherman if they're going to try to bring him in? A first-round pick 2 years from now? Because they've already traded. They traded next year's first-round pick to go get Patrick Mahomes. A move I'm totally on board with. Happened the whole time. They don't have draft picks to give up to go get guys. And again, I don't see John Dorsey giving up a hefty amount of picks to go get a guy who's at least at the plateau in his career. Doesn't make any sense. Especially whenever the cap situation is so tumultuous. You don't want to bring in another guy that you have to pay huge money as you're waiting to sign Marcus Peters. And by the way, this move doesn't make sense to try to sign Marcus Peters either. The Chiefs can't extend Marcus Peters until next year. You know the one guy that they could use this cap space to extend? Dee Ford. Be still my beating heart. And that's the guy. That's the guy that's eligible for an extension that could be worth one in the Chiefs' eyes. And I just have to roll my eyes at that. Because Dee Ford hasn't been consistent at any point in his Chiefs career. No one else on this team is ready for an extension like that. So is it simply to help the team's cap situation for next year? Maybe, but do you think Patrick Mahomes could have appreciated having Jeremy Maclin to throw to? Having an experienced veteran NFL wide receiver? Think Mahomes could have made space in his heart for Jeremy Maclin? I certainly do. Do you think Alex Smith is better with Jeremy Maclin than with DeMarcus Robinson? I certainly do. The other thing is we unpack the why of this question, or the question of why in this topic. The other why or how that I don't understand is why make this move without ever seeming prepared to make this move? Does that make sense? How could you cut Jeremy Maclin knowing that the guy who's going to get on the field behind Jeremy Maclin is going to be Wilson, DeAnthony Thomas, Robinson, Chesson? Essentially, with all the draft picks the Chiefs had last year, all the draft picks the Chiefs had in this most recent draft, you didn't invest one of those in a wide receiver until the fourth or fifth round with Chesson. Can't remember exactly where he was. Mid-round pick. And I'm guessing the Chiefs weren't caught off guard by their own plan here. I mean, the reason that they cut him when they did is because some of the rules of the cap change as far as dead money and everything after June 1st. So he was a post-June 1st cap cut. But also, there are plenty of teams, I think the Chiefs even did this with somebody, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Jay Howard even, actually, where they released him with a post-June 1st designation. And they did that way before June 1st, but that way everybody knows what's going on. You have to carry that cap number until then, as far as I understand it, but you still can be planning otherwise. Jeremy Macklin is running with the first team in OTAs. Terrez Paylor said he looked spry. It's not like he showed up in OTAs and all of a sudden Andy Reid looked at Macklin and went, oh man, he's 25 pounds overweight. His hands aren't as soft as they used to be. He's running sloppy routes. He's blah, 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 blah. There was none of that. Absolutely none of that. So this was a purely business decision, right? There's no other option. The problem is, why make this business decision? It just doesn't make sense. I was surprised when the Chiefs cut Jay Howard, but at least there, it was a position of relative strength, and then they went and drafted Tano Passanio. The defensive line is fine because they addressed it before and after cutting Jay Howard. And again, I think the one silver lining of this is it appears to me that the Chiefs are buying in to Tyreek Hill. And because I've been on this for months, like since the end of last season, maybe during last season, I don't remember, but for as long as I've been doing this show, I've been telling you, Tyreek Hill has all of the physical measurements of DeSean Jackson, except for he's a little bit heavier and a decent bit faster. So now, and Tyreek Hill has shown very good hands, very good ball skills, and the routes that he's run have been, by my relatively untrained eyes, totally passable, if not above average. And so what does he look like after a second year in the system? What does he look like going through OTAs and training camp, being trained to be the number one receiver? Because he's got the physical tools to do it. He's almost exactly the same size as DeSean Jackson. I think he might be a little bit bigger than Antonio Brown. He can be either of those guys, depending on how his route running evolves. So again, I guess there's an optimism to be had in that. But you could have done that with Tyreek Hill without losing Jeremy Macklin. And that cap space is not just so precious that your hand was forced. I know Andy Reid loves to play with six offensive linemen sometimes. But go get a cheaper Ja Reed. Or cut Tyler Bray for those $1.3 million just waiting to be had. Cut both of them if you want all the space. I'd rather lose Ja Reed and Tyler Bray than Jeremy Macklin. And again, the Chiefs lost a home playoff game last year because they couldn't score a touchdown. They couldn't score, and the Steelers won without a touchdown. So how do you up your own offensive production? Cut your quarterback's favorite receiver. Cut your veteran. Cut your leader in the wide receiver room. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you don't want to watch an 18-16 playoff game? A field goal fest? I mean, just cut the guy who's been in the league for long enough to know what he's doing, obviously. When we come back, we'll shift from the why to the what now, do a little bit more of what's coming on the corner for the Chiefs. But if you want to call in and share your thoughts, 913-3810-810 is the phone number. It seems like most of the Chiefs fans that I've seen have reached a relative mutually agreed upon conclusion, which is that this doesn't make sense. And finding that kind of cohesion amongst a fan base is simply impossible. You don't ever get a stadium full of people to agree on something. And this Macklin move just doesn't make sense.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the Jeremy Macklin Show, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm on overthecap.com right now, which is just a wonderful site for people with the same NFL illness that I have. Not the illness that's making me chug cough drops. Can you chug a cough drop? Sure, we'll see if you can chug a cough drop. No, this illness is one that I usually enjoy being held captive by, this Chiefs NFL fandom illness. And I'm looking at Over the Cap, and they've updated it now with Jeremy Macklin's dead money. And this year, the Chiefs are carrying $9.3 million in dead cap money. Now, if you don't have a strong understanding of what $9.38 million looks like in today's NFL, that's more than every single player on the Chiefs. They're more than every cap number on the Chiefs except for Justin Houston, Alex Smith, and Eric Fisher. Their cap numbers this year: Justin Houston, $22 million; Alex Smith, $17 million; Eric Fisher, $9.5 million. Every other player on this year's Chiefs team has a lower cap number than the amount of dead money the Chiefs are eating this year. You know how the Denver Broncos have their cap magic, right? You know, the Broncos just always have more space to sign somebody. How we always go, what is John Elway doing for the Broncos to be able to afford Von Miller, Demaryius Thomas, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, Emmanuel Sanders? All of those guys are making $9.5 million or more. Von Miller's making $20 million this year. You know why the Broncos can do that? Take a jab at how much dead money they're carrying this year, according to overthecap.com. The Chiefs are carrying about $9.5 million. The Broncos are carrying $110,000 in dead cap space. $110,000 in dead cap money for the Denver Broncos. Just about $9.5 million for the Kansas City Chiefs. $9.5 million versus $110,000. You see the problem here? This is something that in John Dorsey's time here, it's the one place where there's been a pretty consistent failure. The Chiefs carried a ton of dead money for Dwayne Bowe for a long time. This year they're carrying $5 million in dead money for Jay Howard, $2.5 million for Jeremy Macklin, Josh Malga, $750,000, Kavari Russell, over $600,000, and Ramiq Wilson, $250,000. Ramiq Wilson's cap number, the dead money the Chiefs are carrying for Ramiq Wilson is more than double the entire Broncos roster in dead cap money.
It blows my mind. And also mentioning Kaveri Russell there, I think there are three contractual / draft pick failures in the Reed Dorsey era that really stand out to me. It's the Dwayne Bowe contract, it's the Kaveri Russell draft pick, and it's this entire Jeremy Maclin situation. And it's probably in that order for me, because Kaveri Russell was a second-round pick who never saw the field and was released like a month after the draft, something psychotically early. Just completely forfeited. Dwayne Bowe was just a non-factor after signing his contract. You know, Jeremy Maclin was on a team that won a playoff game. He had some good moments. But you're going to be paying for those good moments in $2.5 million increments for the next 3 years. I'm just not hugely optimistic about that. Matt Verderam, who's been on this show, is on Sports Tonight with Cody Tapp pretty frequently. Matt Verderam just tweeted this out a few seconds ago. Because I've seen a lot of this in recent days, that Chris Conley had identical numbers to Jeremy Maclin last year. And that's true. Chris Conley and Jeremy Maclin had largely an identical stat line last season. Matt Verderam points out that Chris Conley needed 200 extra snaps to get there. It just doesn't make any sense to me. You made the weaker side of your team, and maybe the weakest position on the team, weaker. And I wasn't very down on the wide receiver group whenever it was Maclin, Hill, ostensibly Kelsey, Conley. I wasn't gnashing my teeth. But now it's embarrassing. It's an embarrassment of a position group. So where do the Chiefs go now? Now what? My first thought is to say, well, the Chiefs can't possibly go in the next year with D'Anthony Thomas or Albert Wilson or Jehu Cheston or DeMarcus Robinson as their number three wide receiver. That just seems impossible to me. So, again, my knee-jerk reaction was that it would make a ton of sense for the Chiefs to go get a veteran guy who could bring some leadership to the team, could run some crisp routes, who could have some guaranteed hands to help out Alex Smith and the whole offense. And then I am reminded that that's exactly what Jeremy Maclin was. They cut Jeremy Maclin, and now they need someone to come be Jeremy Maclin. And you could say, well, they got it. They're paying him too much money. You're going to give him $10 million. Save $10 million against the cap here. You got a lot of money to now spin around and go bring in a guy. Who exactly do you have in mind? Here's the popular name right now. Ready? Here's the popular name to come in and be the number three wide receiver for the Chiefs behind Tyreek Hill, who last year was not used as the number one receiver, and Chris Conley, who needed 200 more snaps than Jeremy Maclin to get Jeremy Maclin statistics. Here's the name. Anquan Boldin, who is, Charlie looked this up for me, I think 75 years old. Charlie says I'm right. 72, okay. I mean, just an ancient man. He's 36. And his last contract with the Lions pulled him $3 million for 1 year. If you are going to bother to bring in a veteran to fill the gap left by Jeremy Maclin, then you shouldn't have let Jeremy Maclin go. And Maclin has not been apparently deteriorating. I mentioned this in the first segment. He was getting first-team reps in OTAs. No one had a bad thing to say about how he looked. And this makes the offense worse. What comes next? You replace Jeremy Maclin with DeMarcus Robinson. A guy who I cannot remember making literally any offensive plays last year. Maybe he caught a pass at some point. But he was not a part of the offense. He made money on the special teams last year. He was a great special teamer. You're going to replace Jeremy Maclin with that guy? I think you can see where this math starts to really tug on what the offense can do now. I'm now looking at DeMarcus Robinson's Pro Football Reference page. He played in 16 games last year. I see literally zero stats. Literally none. He was a great special teamer. He was not a receiver. So you're replacing Jeremy Maclin with that guy. Fantastic. And so the offense is missing a main weapon. It's undeniable that this move makes 2017 offense worse. Again, I think Patrick Mahomes would have been happy to have Jeremy Maclin in 2018, so I think it probably makes the 2018 offense worse. And that's why this is so confusing. Still, I can't get away from it. Not only does this move not make sense for now, I don't see how it makes sense for the future either. I can't pull together a reasonable conclusion. And if this was planned, as it had to have been, how do you not invest in a receiver before Jehu Chasson? Another stat for the optimistic. Last year, Maclin missed 4 games, and Travis Kelce went over 100 yards receiving in 3 of them. Woohoo. If your goal is to get the ball to Travis Kelce and to Tyreek Hill and to Chris Conley more often, just tell them that. Tell the offense that. Run more plays for those guys. Don't run a threat that a defense has to truly care about out of town. You don't think it's a little bit easier for Travis Kelce to get open whenever Jeremy Maclin is lining up in the slot? What happens whenever defenses completely devote themselves to stopping Travis Kelce? You don't think the offense could use Jeremy Maclin in that situation? Okay. Maybe we're just of different minds there then. And now the place we're at with this entire state of the offense discussion is that now it seems like the offense runs through Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and for my money, probably Kareem Hunt. Because if the Chiefs have been planning this, that's the offensive weapon they traded up to go get. And you've got to have something to make this offense less one-dimensional. And releasing Jeremy Maclin was not the thing to do that. It just makes this offense flatter and flatter and flatter. An offense that lost to the Steelers at home in the playoffs last year. Lost to the Steelers, who never scored a touchdown. Also, this team is going to keep changing how it looks. The Chiefs are evolving already in a crazy way. Next year could be completely bonkers, right? In 2018, the Chiefs could potentially be without as many as 5 of their top 6 2017 cap numbers. Jeremy Maclin is gone. Benny Logan's a free agent after this season. Those two seem pretty likely unless they re-up Benny Logan. Tom Bahali almost certainly will be either severely restructured or cut. He'll be paid like $8 million next year with very little dead cap money. As if that's something that John Dorsey cares about. Alex Smith makes all the sense in the world to cut next year. Next year is the year where really it makes sense to get out of that contract. Ideally, Patrick Mahomes is ready to take the reins. If Justin Houston doesn't show up this year, he could be released after this season for relatively meager cap destruction. It'd be $5.6 million in dead cap money, but it would save $15 million, as cutting Alex Smith would be $3.6 million in dead cap money, saving $17 million.
Now, no Jamal Charles, no Jeremy Maclin. This team is evolving in a big way, and I would love to even be able to say, you know, at least the Chiefs are devoted to doing what's best for next season, for building around Patrick Mahomes. But I'm still not quite seeing that. Also, I hate so much what we're doing now with the Chiefs, with the story, everything about it. Yesterday during Sports Sunday, Mick asked for Charlie to print off a list of free agent wide receivers to try to come up with, you know, what could the Chiefs do to bolster their receiver group here? Because it's a tough one. And then we sat here as a group collectively for 5 minutes trying to talk ourselves into Eddie bleeping Royal. Do you still have that list over there, Charlie? Is it around you somewhere? He's gesturing at me now. Maybe it's in the trash can. I'll look for it in the break. If it is in the trash can, I'll hesitate to take it out because it belongs there. Because that was like the best option on this list. Justin Blackmon was on this list. At this point, I would be personally offended if the Chiefs even bothered to bring in a veteran wide receiver. Because if they admit that this team is better with a veteran wide receiver on it than without one, then you just have to go nosediving into your mirror until you see your reflection well enough to go, oh, we cut the guy that we wanted, really. Because the guy, the free agent wide receiver now who would make the most sense to add to this group of wide receivers for the Chiefs is literally Jeremy Maclin. Adding Jeremy Maclin to this group would make all the sense in the world right now. I just don't get it. And this is a very, very rare place for me. And for, I think, most of us, probably. Because even for moves that you don't personally like, with the Chiefs, with the Royals, throughout all of sports, I think most introspective, self-aware sports fans can at least find the line of logic for a move they don't like. Right? Within the realm of reasonability. And then that, listen, not every sports fan is introspective. Some of the fun about being a sports fan is being super aggressive and reflexive. But I understand that. But I haven't found anybody to stand up for this Maclin deal or to even find, or even for myself. I like finding both sides of an argument. I myself haven't been able to find the real logic for this. So I'm going to be fascinated. I don't know whenever Andy Reid is next getting open for press availability. I don't know whenever John Dorsey is going to talk to the press. But I will be very interested to see what those guys say in response to some of the questions that are going to get tossed their way. And really, I think the most interesting thing, I think the most interesting, very, very tangible thing that we're going to be able to see here in the coming weeks and months is, do the Chiefs admit that they need more help at wide receiver? Are they going to try to bring in Anquan Boldin, Eddie Royal, some other guy? Because to make a move like cutting Jeremy Maclin, you've got to be awfully damn sure that your wide receiver room is good enough to let its best guy go. Good enough to let its veteran presence go. And again, spoiler alert on that $10 million in cap space, it's not going anywhere else. They're not trading for Richard Sherman. They're not going to make some blockbuster move. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. Please, if you have anything, if you have any alternate perspective, convince me that there's some logic behind this. Because as far as I can tell, this move makes the Chiefs worse this year, it makes the Chiefs worse next year, and it makes me so sad. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show. Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jeremy Macklin edition. Mick Schaefer's here now, gesturing at my shoulders because I'm in a tank top today. The sun is just peeking through, so I just want to let my muscles peek through also a little bit here. Mick, though, is in a mankini, which I think is really the bolder fashion statement between the two of us. I've been sick for the last 2 days, so I have just been, like, either sweating or freezing for every waking moment of the last 2 days. So, I'm going a little suns out, guns out today. Got no shame in that. Sometimes you just got to show the world what you're working with. There's a lot of good stuff to talk about today. Everything from the Royals, everything going on with the Royals currently, to the situation with Kansas State, to the fact that I moved out of my parents' house this week and have already had some interesting experiences, mostly revolving around just how cheap ramen is. But we'll get to all that later on in bits and pieces. Because this is the Jeremy Macklin hour, and then at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, Seth Kaiser from Arrowhead Pride will be joining me to do more of this Jeremy Macklin discussion. He wrote an article titled, Why I Hate Cutting Jeremy Macklin, and I'm sure he's going to have plenty to break down. Next year's cap situation for the Chiefs, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be fascinating because there are so many guys they could be releasing. And it, you know, could be finally to build around a first-round drafted rookie quarterback. Obviously, second year for Patrick Mahomes next season. And I think there's something to be said for this way of... I think there are two ways to win in the NFL. I've unpacked this a few times. If you're new to the show, you probably haven't heard it because I haven't talked about it in a little while. But I think there are two ways to win in the NFL. You either get elite quarterback play or you get cheap, good quarterback play. And the Chiefs have a chance for both, obviously, with Patrick Mahomes as the goal. But at the very least, at the very least, good case scenario, the best case mediocre scenario, is that they get average quarterback play from Patrick Mahomes on his rookie contract. Because whenever you have underpaid quarterback play, you have more room in your cap to play around with everything else going on around you. You can afford a guy like Jeremy Macklin. You can afford more weapons for your quarterback. You can afford to bulk up your defense. That's what the Seahawks did with their Super Bowl winning team. They got good, cheap quarterback play from Russell Wilson, so they paid their defense. The Raiders are going to be an extremely different team whenever they have to pay Derek Carr. He's eventually going to get a monster contract because it's very, very hard to let top 10 quarterbacks leave your team. But unless you're a top 4 quarterback ballpark, whenever you have to overcompensate in payment for that guy, you're not likely to get your money's worth. You're not likely to maintain your status as a contender. The Chiefs are in a bad salary cap situation. The only logic I can piece together for why they cut Jeremy Macklin is so they could give themselves some more wiggle room as far as the cap this year and next year. And having to cut meaningful, valuable players is not a good way to manage your team. If your cap situation is so dire that you have to cut your at least nominally number one wide receiver, you're making some bad decisions. And this is after the Chiefs had to let go of Jay Howard, which is, again, a $5 million cap hit on this year's salary cap. They've had to make these decisions twice this year, letting Howard and Macklin go. The Chiefs have done a lot of things very well under Reed and Dorsey. Reed and Dorsey together have been an undeniable good for the Chiefs. I don't mean to say anything contrary to that. However, the Chiefs' current cap situation would not reinforce that knowledge. If you just showed me a team in this kind of cap trouble, this kind of apparent cap trouble, where they're cutting a starting defensive end and they're starting number one wide receiver, I would say, oh, well, that's a team in turmoil. That's probably a team with front office turnover. It's certainly not a team that's contending. You don't carry that kind of burden with you whenever you're a top-level franchise. It's just not, it's not a sign of a well-run organization. The Chiefs are a well-run organization, but this does not look good. More with Seth Kaiser coming up next. This is Sports Sunday.
Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. We're now officially, I believe, in our second hour of Jeremy Macklin Radio. And I can't even begin to consider talking about anything else. Maybe here in a little while, but it's the topic of the day, obviously. It's the topic of this week, obviously. It could be the topic that revolves around the Chiefs most tightly for a few weeks now. As training camp gets started, we'll start to move a little bit, but I don't think we're going to spend much of this entire season by going at least a few days at a time without talking about Jeremy Macklin. He's going to be a name that is uttered extremely frequently among Chiefs fans, even though he's going to be playing for someone else in 2017. It's still just thoroughly baffling to me. It's confusing. It's, I guess, nothing but a business move, if it's anything. But at the very least, I don't have to be alone in all of these struggles. Seth Kaiser from Arrowhead Pride joining us again. Seth, I try to put this show on a diet of you. I feel like if you're on like every week or every other week, eventually it's going to reach a point where 810 is just going to try to hire you and then let me walk it. I don't want that to happen. But whenever...
yeah, you got to mix it up. That's smart.
Yeah,
I see it.
I can't let you monopolize, you know, what I'm trying to turn into my career. But whenever I saw...
I completely understand.
Whenever I saw that the Chiefs released Jeremy Macklin, I think my first thought was, like, I need a drink. And my second thought was, I got to call Seth on Sunday. Because we talked briefly early on in the offseason about how you believed that the chatter about cutting Jeremy Macklin was one of the dumbest takes going on pre-draft, and how
Absolutely. The
idea of you know, freeing up that cap space was just thoroughly ridiculous. And unfortunately, it turns out that that John Dorsey and Andy Reid disagreed with you.
Yes, John Dorsey and Andy Reid clearly don't read what I write or
right.
take it seriously. I'm shattered.
Yeah,
my self-importance has been destroyed.
You've been destroying one illusion after another today, so it makes sense. But so, what was your, whenever you saw that news trickle on your Twitter feed, what was your gut reaction, your first feeling, your kind of your knee jerk before you ever put finger to keyboard?
The thought that flashed through my mind was, you've got to be kidding. I wasn't on Twitter when I saw it happen. Someone texted me and was like, let me know what was going on. And my first thought was that it was a joke.
Right.
Because I went so hard at that idea earlier.
Yes, yes.
But I read about it, and then I read about the way it was handled, and I read about just, and then, you know, his reaction came out, and it's just like, the whole thing was just like, this has to be a joke. And what I always try to do, I'm a pretty optimistic guy, generally speaking. Usually, like, even in film reviews, I try to be as objective as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like to look for, okay, what can someone do as well as what they can't do? You know, you try to look at the sunny side of things. And so what I always try to do with moves like this, like, okay, if I was them, why would I do this?
Yeah.
And I sat there, and I could not think of a good reason to do it like this, unless there is some player out there, some trade out there that they are desperate to make happen now. Beyond that, I couldn't think of a single reason that I would classify as a good one, other than, you know, Jeremy Macklin showed up at OTAs and looked horrible, which you think we would have heard about.
Right. Well, Trez Peyer ran
out for two things. I couldn't think of one.
He tweeted that he looked spry or whatever, so that wasn't – yeah, I was in the same boat.
Yeah. Yeah, spry. That was the word I saw. Spry sounds like a good thing.
Yes.
And Trez isn't afraid to tell it like it is.
No, of course.
I mean, Macklin was just so blunt about, man, I didn't have a good season last year. It's my job to make up for it. I felt like I let them down. I mean, he's just a consummate professional. And here's my thing, and this is the thing that I keep telling people, because the people that are kind of supporting this, oh, you know, he had a bad year, he's washed, he's no good. He's 29.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's soon to be 30, but it's just, and if you go back and you watch the All-22, and this is what we talked about earlier this offseason, if you go back and watch the All-22 as the year closed out, he looked like himself again. Mm-hmm. He had a nagging groin injury that kept him out 4 games, and those things, they don't just keep you out. They also, they're like a hamstring injury, you know? You try running with a jacked up groin.
Right.
That's not easy to do.
No.
And so he didn't really look like himself for a lot of the year. He had a personal tragedy that occurred early that really, he said, messed with him mentally. Hmm. But as the year wound down, he looked fine. He was getting separation. He was back to running great routes. I mean, when they threw at him, it went well. They just didn't go his way much.
Well, You wrote a piece for Arrowhead Pride here soon after. You told me before we started here on the show that it was midnight and you were angry. So, you know, you can't be blamed for what you said while it was late and you were furious. But the article is headlined, "Why I Hate Cutting Jeremy Macklin." And it's a really good read. But I'm hoping for the people that haven't read it yet, you can kind of help us all wade into these waters. You've got several reasons why you hate cutting Jeremy Macklin.
Uh-huh.
You did not stall on any one of them. But the first one up is that it makes the offense worse. And I would say, as a supplement, the offense last year was not good. The offense last year was the problem. And even if you think that Jeremy Macklin is overpaid as the number three option on the offense, the drop-off from Jeremy Macklin to, give me a name,
whoever.
Albert Wilson, D'Anthony Thomas, Chesson, Rob, the drop-off from Macklin to whoever that other guy is as the third or fourth option is just it's a cliff. So
it's huge.
It makes the offense worse. How are you looking at the offense as a whole, seeing that subtraction take away from the whole thing?
Well, I mean, I want you to think of it this way. The people that are supporting this move, they're saying, oh, well, you know, Chris Conley will step up. Tyreek Hill is going to have a huge year, okay? Those are the two people that are getting mentioned the most.
Yep.
Here's my response to that. Let's say best-case scenario, and Tyreek Hill really is what he showed he could be in flashes. Because,
mm-hmm.
look, he shows flashes of maybe being a superstar, and that would be great. And, hey, Chris Conley improved by leaps and bounds last year. He really he did better with his route running. He looked a lot stronger. He was real physical. Great. Those are two guys.
Yeah.
The Chiefs run three wide receiver sets constantly. No matter what, unless someone like Albert Wilson or, you know, Robinson or one of the other younger guys does something unbelievable, like completely out of nowhere, like almost like Tyreek last year, only on a more complete player level than just kind of early on, at least Tyreek was more of a spot guy, and he got better and better as the year went along. But so maybe if someone has like a Tyreek Hill breakout, unless that happens, the offense could have been better with Macklin. So let's say we get best case scenario with Hill and Conley. They both get better. Well, you know what's even better than two good receivers? Three.
Yep.
And so there's no scenario, even if, let's say the offense is better, but the ceiling got a little lower.
Yes.
Unless, like I said, Macklin has just completely fallen off a cliff, and I don't think he has.
There's no evidence of that.
And so that right. There's no evidence of that. The evidence points towards the fact that he was fine as the year wound down, and I think he's going to rebound just fine. Now we'll see what happens. Who knows? But with the evidence we have available, the offensive ceiling got worse. Even if your best-case scenario happens, my point is it could be better.
Yep.
You don't want just two good wide receivers. You want three. You want a guy who can line up anywhere on the field. You want a guy who Alex Smith trusts. It makes the offense worse unless something that we have zero evidence of has occurred. It makes the offense worse, and there's no debating that. So, yeah, that's first one. You know, this is going to be a cheery segment, I can tell.
Right, yes. Well, the other thing also that you mentioned Alex Smith. Alex Smith said on Saturday, he said it's hard to digest. You know, that doesn't sound like a guy who saw this coming either. Doesn't sound like a guy who was especially excited to lose, you know, one of his most reliable, most trustworthy options. I don't know how this isn't bad for Alex Smith and also eventually bad for Pat Mahomes. You also mentioned, though, it removes a guy from the roster who's been a good influence on younger receivers, which this is an entire staff of younger receivers who need to learn and develop. I don't know how much you have to expand on that other than that Jeremy Maclin has always shown to be a good mentor.
Well, and he has, and here's the thing. Both last offseason, where he called Chris Conley and said, hey, you know, you're coming to Kansas City to train with me.
Yeah.
And then this offseason, my understanding is he did the same thing. Hill was there for a while. Wilson was there for a while. The thing about Jeremy Maclin is he's been in the league for a long time, and he's also a guy who, back in college, was just an absolute burner, and then a few injuries slowed him down. Just a hair. He's still a very fast wide receiver. And so he was forced to learn to do more things. So he runs fantastic routes. He can beat every type of coverage, press, you know, zone, whatever you've got. He can read and beat the coverage. He knows how to find the open spots. And more importantly, he knows how to teach it from what we've seen. Now, maybe Chris Conley's development would have happened on its own anyway, but is it really a coincidence that his footwork and ability to handle press coverage was so much better in 2016 than it was in 2015 after working with Maclin? You know, people always talk about veterans taking young guys under their wing.
Mm-hmm.
Often, I think that's a bit exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches coach and players play.
Right.
And, you know, players might help out a little, but coaches coach and players play. With Maclin, though, there was a lot of documented history of him taking the room and showing them, hey, this is what happens on this play. You know, this will help you if you do X differently. And all the young receivers talked about it, how he just was so great with that. And I can't see that being a positive. That is incredibly young wide receiver room. The oldest guy in there is Albert Wilson. I think he's like 25.
That's what I was just thinking. I think frankly, he's the most senior guy. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, and I'll get called out on this, but, you know, I don't mean any disrespect to Albert Wilson, but he's never shown the route running ability to be able to do it on his own, let alone teach it to someone.
It is disrespect, but it's also accurate.
So it's nothing but a negative in that department because they lost their leader. I mean, the way Eric Berry is the leader in the secondary room, every account we have is that Maclin was the leader in that wide receiver room.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that you mentioned, or one other thing that you mentioned here, is it's another failure from John Dorsey at the wide receiver position and now inheriting a bunch of dead money. The Chiefs have dead money in Jeremy Maclin for 2017, 18, and 19. That's $2.5 million for each of those years. They got dead money this year for Jay Howard. They're going to end up with dead money for Alex Smith. Tom Bahali's a pretty clean cut. They could end up with a bunch of dead money for a guy like Justin Houston. The dead money is plaguing
whoa,
this front
whoa,
office.
Let's not get crazy.
Well,
guys.
Eventually, not this year, but next year. Next year's the first year that you could argue that if he doesn't
sure,
show up this year,
if he continues to struggle with injuries.
Yes. No, certainly not this year though. But the thing that I thought so early on in this process of figuring out what was going on with Maclin is it reminded me of the Dwayne Bowe deal, where it just clearly was a bad deal. The Chiefs also lost a third and a sixth round pick for Jeremy Maclin. The other thing, though, really, I think this is probably on par or very close to on par with Kavare Russell, which I think still might stand as the largest failure in the John Dorsey era. I think these are one and two. You can order them however you want.
I think you know, the Russell is a pretty big failure, although I would say, you know, if you're going to pick a guy who you immediately recognize after, like, 2 or 3 weeks, like, wow, we were wrong about this guy, I'm glad that they were willing to cut bait rather than hang on. So there's at least a silver lining to that.
I guess.
Because they've done such a good job drafting other corners, right? And so that's one thing, you know, they've done a good job finding corners off the scrap heap. So Dorsey's record on secondary players especially, and corners to a lesser extent, is really good overall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just the one glaring failure with Russell. And then they have the whole Robinson thing, but that's another, that's a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah, okay.
But mostly the record there has been good. Right? With wide receivers, you have two disasters. Dwayne Bowe's contract was an unmitigated disaster.
Mm-hmm.
He never had even a good season after getting that huge deal. And by the time he was cut, I mean, that first year was like $10 million in dead money. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
And now with Macklin, you've got a situation like what you said. This is a guy they wanted so badly that they got charged with and convicted of, or however you want to view it, mm-hmm. of tampering and lost draft picks. They paid him a very, very big contract. And now 2 years later, when he's still in what should be the late prime of his career, he's gone.
Yeah.
And they're eating more dead money. One of the problems that I've had with Dorsey, one of the few problems, all of this should do with a caveat that Dorsey has done a very good job overall. One of the things that's bothered me at times is how much dead money the Chiefs keep seeming to accumulate.
Yes.
And I thought that was getting better last year. Once Bowles stuff came off the books and Flowers stuff, you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
It was starting to get better. Well, now we're just getting a whole new round of it. People are always asking, how do the Broncos afford all these guys? Because mm-hmm. they have almost no dead money. When you're talking about Jeremy Macklin's cap hit, and you're talking about Jay Howard's cap hit, you're talking about some other guys' dead money, you're talking about a salary of a good player.
$10.5 million this year after cutting Jeremy Macklin. You got $5 million with
yeah,
Jay Howard, $750,000 with Josh Malga, $600,000 for Kavari Russell, $250,000 for Amik Wilson. That's $7 million, $9.5 million whenever you add Jeremy Macklin's 2.3, all according to Over the Cap. I just looked that up. I mean, that's the salary of Eric Fisher, which is the fourth
right.
highest. That's the fourth biggest cap hit on the Chiefs roster right now. Now third because Jeremy Macklin was ahead of him.
Right. And that's the problem that I have is this dead money. That is a huge killer because you're paying for something you're not getting. It's like you're setting that money on fire.
Yes.
And look, every team has that happen. It's unavoidable, especially, you know, with those lower level hits, but it's these big ones that just kill you. And I just there's the dead money issue. And there's the fact this is their second attempt. I've had a bunch of people tell me as a justification, well, this offense doesn't need a number one wide receiver. And here's what I would say to that. Andy Reid knows this offense better than anyone,
yep.
and he's signed off on trying to get a number one wide receiver and pay them outlandish amounts of money twice now. It's just both times we've had a failure. The only thing that saves the Macklin thing from being a complete unmitigated failure to where I don't quite put it up there with the bowl failure
mm-hmm.
is that he did have a really, really good year his first year
yeah.
that helped turn around an offense. You know, I mean, everyone remembers, didn't have a receiving touchdown by a wide receiver the year before. He had 8 on his own. He had about 1,100 yards. He had a career high in catches. He had a really good year that first year. So that, and then he did a lot of mentoring. And he did still make some pretty decent plays last year, although people, well, we can debate that till the cows come home.
Mm-hmm.
So that saves it from being a complete and total disaster, but it's still a disaster when you tamper with a guy to get him and lose draft picks to get him, and then 2 years later you cut him and eat a large amount of dead money. That is a complete failure. And John Dorsey's record at wide receiver, I think, is far and away, since his time with the Chiefs, the weakest aspect of what he's done. He's done a very good job in pretty much every other area.
But
wide receiver.
It's been a mess. And I keep going back to the dead money thing, because, again, if you put that number at $9.5 million, again, that's the salary of Eric Fisher or of Travis Kelce and Derek Johnson, or of Derek Johnson and Ron Parker, or Derek Johnson and yep. Alan Bailey. Like, that is real,
yep.
real money. Just thrown away.
It absolutely is. And that's that. And like, yeah, it's money that's in the garbage. And again, it's all with the caveat that really Dorsey's done a good job. Andy Reid has done a good job. But this is just like, I'm having to quote Alex Smith, I'm having a hard time digesting it. I
yeah.
don't see the benefit. And if I recall, I think the last caption that I had in there, the way that it was done
yeah.
eats at me too.
Yeah.
Because it leaves a team leader and a guy who, from all reports, is a good guy and a team-first guy, it leaves him in the lurch
mm-hmm.
because of the timing of his cut.
And he skipped his honeymoon to go to OTAs.
That doesn't sit right
and
with me.
All, yeah. No, you're right. It's a bad look all the way around.
It is. And I just it's a bad look for the Chiefs, because what you have is, oh, you know, we're a locker room, family-first type culture. This is a business move. I get it. But at the same time, you can designate someone a post-June 1st cut anytime. And I heard they were dangling him for trade offers, and I guess I get that. But, I mean, all the things that happened here, you got a guy who postponed his honeymoon so he could attend voluntary team activities, who had receivers from the team meet with him in Kansas City again so he could work with them. And this whole time, the team had to have known this was in the works. And I guess it's just a bad look. And so it's tough to try to merge that with this whole idea of, you know, Andy Reid's a player's coach, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. It doesn't sit well with me when you cut a guy that you could have cut earlier, prior to free agency, when the market's a lot hotter, and he would have gotten a decent contract elsewhere. Yeah. Not an elite contract, because, you know, getting cut from a team is never a good thing, but a decent contract, whereas now odds are the best he's going to be able to get is going to be a one-year prove-it deal.
Right, yep.
And that's unfortunate. And it's the same thing with the timing of when they cut Brandon Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't sit right with me. I understand it's a business. But, you know, Therese made a good point in an article he wrote about this. You know, the next time you want to kill a guy for, not showing up to OTAs mm-hmm. to work out on his own, or not taking a hometown discount, or, you know what I mean, any yep. of these things that everyone believes teams should do, or players should do, because it's team first, right?
Yep.
Remember this moment. Remember that Jeremy Macklin was a guy who did everything right, and he got cut unceremoniously at one of the worst possible times. That's why players should get theirs.
Yep.
Because it is a business.
All right, Seth, last thing here. We've talked a lot about the why and the how and the what exactly mm-hmm. was anyone thinking. But now let's look ahead, because I guess that's what we have to do now. What are you yeah. looking for? What are you looking for going forward? What do the Chiefs have to do to continue to be a contender this year? What does the offense have to do to take a step forward? Who are you watching most closely? You can answer any of those questions.
You know, what'll need to happen for the offense to not take a step backward? Or here's the thing. We need the offense to take a step forward. You yep. pointed out the offense was the problem last year.
Yes.
And we need the offense to take a step forward if they want to be a serious contender. Yes, they went 12-4 last year. Yes, they beat some good teams. Yes, the offense had flashes here and there, and the defense had more flashes, quite a few more. But ultimately, the offense has got to be better than it was for them to be a legitimate contender and not just a contender for a playoff spot.
Absolutely.
And so for that offense to get better than it was last year, you need Tyreek Hill to take a step forward and be a guy who can be on the field 90% of the time and run a full route tree. Now you really need that mm-hmm. with Macklin gone. You need Chris Conley to take another step forward and continue to be a little bit sharper with his cuts and just kind of harness those physical gifts that he has. And most of all now, you need Alex Smith to be better than he has been at any point while he's been in Kansas City. Because Jeremy Macklin was a guy who could bail out bad throws sometimes. And you lost that. So, I mean, if Kelce stays the same and those three guys get better, yeah, the offense will still take a step forward. And then everyone will be like, oh, they made the right move. My opinion will still be, yeah, imagine if all this had happened and they had another good receiver. That would be great.
Yes, no kidding.
But if Hill improves and Conley improves, and Alex improves, yes, the offense can still take a step forward. So, yay!
Yeah, that's a lot of ifs. Seth, as always, thank you for coming and sharing your wisdom. It's at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. That's MN Chiefs Fan. Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride. You can read his stuff there. You can follow him on Twitter and become smarter every tweet he puts out, with a few notable exceptions.
No pressure.
No. Seth, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Josh.
That'll do it for now. The mystery continues. The baffling nature of this Jeremy Macklin call continues to floor us all next on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
Well, the Chiefs traded up and got Patrick Mahomes, and everybody knows what's going on. Everybody from Alex Smith to Pat Mahomes to the Chiefs Twitter account, who is putting out stuff about Pat Mahomes throwing a pass to Jeremy Macklin, effectively erasing Alex Smith from everyone's memory.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Last time I talked about this, I said it was like watching, like before the ink on the divorce papers were dry, your mom was
taping pictures of her boyfriend's face over the family photos of you and mom and dad.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I was thinking about that whenever that news came out. Good choice of lighter, Charlie. Extremely topical. That Chiefs Twitter gif of Pat Mahomes throwing to Jeremy Maclin. That will never happen, at least not in a Chiefs uniform. Whenever Pat Mahomes is starting for the Broncos in 5 years, then maybe. Just hard to swallow. Seth Kizer made a bunch of great points, and we covered a lot of ground in that interview. But one of the things he said towards the end I thought was worth expanding on now. Whenever you say, okay, now what does the Chiefs offense need to do? We collectively could all agree, I think, that the Chiefs offense needs to improve from where it was last year. And I guess actually, really, if you don't agree with that, then, I don't know, go watch the film until you do. I'll say simply, the Chiefs offense needs to take a step forward from where it was last year. Now, I don't know if you are going to put the burden of improvement on Andy Reid or Alex Smith or the running game, whatever, the offensive line. It really doesn't matter. That's where we can go ahead and split hairs. You know, what about the offense most needs to improve? We could debate that all day. But the offense as a whole needs to take steps forward from where it was last year. They scored 16 points in a home playoff game after a week off. The offense, it was never good enough last year. Had some good moments. Some two-minute drill Alex Smith stuff turned out really, really well. It had good moments, but it was not good enough. It might have been good enough for, you know, a contender to make the AFC Championship game and then lose the Patriots. But it wasn't. It ended up being not even that good on its best day. For the Chiefs to be a contender next year, the offense has to take a step forward. Now, for that to happen, as Seth pointed out, there needs to be an improvement from Tyreek Hill, which was the case before Jeremy Maclin, an improvement from Chris Conley, even more so than there was before Jeremy Maclin, and improvement from Alex Smith. He said we need to see a better version of Alex Smith than we have ever seen. This needs to be Alex Smith's best season ever for this offense to get better. That's my taking it to the next step. Seth is two level headed for this. But I'm saying now, really, we have to get Alex Smith's best. And not the best that we've seen. Better. We need to see Alex Smith's better for this offense to take a step forward. If Alex Smith is as good as he was maybe in 2015, plus the two minute drill successes from 2017, and that's just sort of, we see kind of the best pieces together, then we've seen Alex Smith be good enough to keep the offense running flat. But for steps forward, Tyreek Hill has to begin to be DeSean Jackson. Chris Conley has to begin to be Jeremy Maclin. I think that's a totally reasonable comparison, by the way. That's not just so I can continue to be aggressive and frustrating to all of us together, collectively. I'm not trying to be antagonistic by making that comparison. But Tyreek Hill's got to start being DeSean Jackson. Chris Conley's got to start being Jeremy Maclin. Kareem Hunt has got to start being a productive NFL running back right away because Spencer Ware can't do that on his own. The running game has to take steps forward. The offensive line has to take steps forward. And Alex Smith has to be better than we've ever seen from him for this offense to be better than it was last year. Anybody expecting that? Because it would have just been a whole lot simpler to make this offense better if you at least still had the good pieces from last year. To discard, if not your true number one wide receiver, which I think you could still make an argument that Jeremy Maclin was. To just keep him around, keep your pieces around, and to see growth from Hill, Conley, and maybe even Alex Smith, which I think is rather unlikely considering that he's kind of out of the development stage in his career, I would say. I think we pretty much know what Alex Smith is. Although, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, with Patrick Mahomes behind him, Alex Smith knows that if he has a season just like last year, it'll be his last in Kansas City, if Patrick Mahomes even looks passable through practices throughout the year. if Patrick Mahomes looks like a passable NFL starter to Andy Reid and Alex Smith repeats his 2016 season, he'll be done as a Chief, and he'll end up spending 2018 with some mid-level team that doesn't really have a chance. The Jags trying to put together a contender. Or maybe if Ben Roethlisberger retires, maybe Pittsburgh trying to give themselves one more chance. Which would be a great situation for Alex Smith. So that's falling up for Alex Smith. I don't see that happening, though. Although the discussion about Alex Smith's trade value, I think, is fascinating. But we'll get there when we get there. The only way that I see Alex Smith really growing this year is because he doesn't have to look over his shoulder anymore and guess who his replacement is. He can feel Pat Mahomes' breath on his neck. He knows exactly where Patrick Mahomes is. He's right behind him. So maybe that takes a little bit of a burden off of Alex Smith's shoulders, right? Maybe he's a little more freewheeling. Because whenever we've seen Alex Smith be reckless, it's been pretty good. Reckless Alex Smith is at the very least, a very interesting quarterback. He doesn't have the great physical tools to be reckless. Usually recklessness is best accompanied by a big arm. But an Alex Smith who's a little less risk-averse, it's a quarterback I'm interested in watching more of. So maybe we get a little bit of that from Alex Smith. But again, to take a step forward now is just harder. And the offense cannot repeat last year's performance. Because also, the defense is not going to repeat last year's performance. Last year's defense was phenomenal, especially by way of point scoring. Now, I don't think that the defense is going to become even pedestrian, really. I think the defense will continue to be above average next year. And maybe top five, top ten. I would say that Angus is a top 10 defense. They did it last year without a healthy Justin Houston for the most part, half the season without a healthy Dee Ford. They did it with a carousel at the cornerback position opposite Marcus Peters. Did it without Allen Bailey and Jay Howard. Now they're going to do it without Jay Howard again, obviously, because they released him, but you got second year of Chris Jones, Tano Passanio in the rotation. The defense might be better equipped this year, even, than it was last year, if you can account for a healthy team. But they're not going to score at the pace they did last year. It's just impossible. So you need the offense to take a step forward, I think, for the team to even level with where they were last year. To win the division again and to lose their first game again. And that's just harder to do whenever you remove a weapon from the offense. It just doesn't make any sense. The calculations that the Chiefs had to have done in cutting Jeremy Maclin must have been really difficult. And I just don't know what they came up with to justify this decision in general. One other bit of Chiefs conversation that happened this week before the Jeremy Maclin stuff, I thought it's small, but I found it interesting, something that Ron Parker said at OTAs. This whole conversation you've had about organized team activities and their vitality or lack thereof, I spent a little bit of time on it last weekend, but I'm not super enthralled by the conversation. Jeremy Maclin was at OTAs. In fact, he skipped his honeymoon, postponed his honeymoon to go to the OTAs, and then was released. Like, I don't know what kind of prodding you need to be moved over to team. It's not that big of a deal. But I read Ron Parker's answer to this question, and then today I went back and found the sound, and it's actually our very own Cody Tapp, who asks Ron Parker a question that brings upon an answer from Ron Parker that actually even more formed my opinion on the importance of OTAs. Listen to this.
Ron, what difference to you does it make if Eric Berry's not here for the OTAs, for the voluntary part?
It don't make no difference to me if Eric Berry's not here for OTAs. I did it last year without him, so it's kind of the same schedule that we've been working on. And I just believe whatever he's doing, he's doing whatever he got to do to make himself ready for the season when the season starts.
I did it last year without him, Ron Parker says. And I heard that and read that comment. I went, holy crap. Yeah, no kidding. And I went back and looked to find the exact date of this all. Is Eric Berry not being at OTAs detrimental to the team? Eric Berry wasn't even under contract with the Chiefs until August 28th last year. And Berry and Parker were both tremendous last season. And the whole secondary was fantastic last year, in large part. The whole safety group, at the very least. You can certainly say that the safeties last year were tremendous. Maybe the strongest unit on the team. You can fight me here or there, whatever. But I could, at the very least, make that case. Because Eric Berry was, I mean, a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. Ron Parker is still somehow severely underrated. I love Ron Parker. Daniel Sorensen took some huge steps last year. Not just like, oh, he's taking steps into being a nice role player. Like, he was making plays. He took steps towards being a playmaker last year. The depth behind those guys, there was never a time whenever I could say, oh, well, if there would have been a starter back there, then maybe that doesn't go for 40 yards. That whole unit, the whole way back, to guys like Eric Murray, developmental young guys, whenever he was in, you felt okay about it. That group was so solid last year, and Eric Berry wasn't even with the team until the very end of August. It was just before the season began. So with that in mind, the idea of Eric Berry not being at voluntary practices this year just really, 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 really does not concern me. And I hadn't put those, maybe that's naivete on my part, but I hadn't put together those pieces until Ron Parker brought up that, yeah, man, Berry wasn't here last year and we did just fine. Thank you. I found that to be interesting. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you have anything to say about Jeremy Maclin or anything else going on in sports. But it is, unfortunately, strictly voluntary. But like Ron Parker, I'll be just fine if you don't show up.